Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
We're all like guns, and I love being free. Because I'm armed, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hello and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 118. I'm one of your hosts tonight, Mike, and with me tonight is Thomas.
Hey, Mike.
I almost called you George.
No, George booked off sick again. You know, Grandpa's been out on his back for the last couple days, so.
Yeah, we'll give him a pass. Anyways, Thomas, why don't you start us off with what you did this week in Guns?
Well, I wanted George here. I've had a list of paybacks for him this week, but you know, I guess we'll wait for next week. I was even going to have the recording of the bus backing up backwards to play, but no, I decided I'll be nice. We won't do it. I actually went shooting twice. When we talked about it last week, I actually went shooting 2 days in a row in one day.
2 days in a row in one day.
I went New Year's Eve, and then it hit midnight, and then I was there New Year's Day. So I actually shot from 20 into 216 into 217, or out and in.
There you go.
What else?
So does that mean that your range is a 24/7 range?
Yeah, the indoor range. Ooh. Is.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and it's heated.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Well, listener Jason contacted me today, and he said, when are you going shooting again? And I said, well, I'm probably either going today or going to this afternoon. And he said, well, if you want some company, just let me know. So I messaged him back, and he said, are you going to be shooting indoors or outdoors? And I just laughed. I said, it's minus 20. I'm old. We're shooting indoors. There's no way I'm shooting outdoors, because you're not going to last, right?
Yeah, but for a lot of people, that's their only option, right? Like, that's my only option.
Yeah, that was my only option for a long time, too. Like, Northumberland was outdoors, so it's... Mm-hmm. Well, he was bringing a new shooter out, too, and if you're, well, what's the point of shooting outdoors? The young lady would freeze her butt off, so we kept them warm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you're bringing a new shooter, you try and do it the best. I generally don't. Unless I have someone that, you know, for whatever reason, they'll never be able to go shooting again, I won't take a shooter out in the winter. I'll always try and wait till the spring or the fall, summertime, something like that.
It's just, it's not safe after 10 or 15 minutes. If you can't feel your fingers, that's not a good idea.
And it's just not fun, right?
No,
it's going to be a miserable first time out for them, right? If you're...
They're not going to enjoy it at all.
Yeah, their hands are shaking. They're not hitting their targets. They're starting to get frustrated. It's just, yeah.
Well, we had fun today. Jason brought up his M&P, so he shot that for a bit while I coached Kaylee on the 22. He's still not happy with his M&P, because at 10 yards, our groups, and we both shot it at 10 yards. They're acceptable, but at 22 yards, even benched, the groups opened up. So I don't know how much of a... He was talking about getting one of those triggers, the Aztec triggers?
Apex
triggers?
Yeah.
But they're what, $400?
Whoa, really?
Yeah, he said they're quite expensive. I don't know. I don't know. I think he said they're around $400.
Maybe that's the complete set, because there's different versions of the package you can get. Because for IDPA, you can't do any external modifications. So when Sarah bought her, she got hers that was just the internals parts.
How much was that?
I can't remember. I'm just going to take a guess. $150.
Okay, well, I'll mention that to him.
And it lowered her trigger pull down substantially, and it's no longer like spongy. It's a crisp trigger now.
Yeah, it's heavy. It's really heavy, and it's hard. It gets really hard just before the break. It's worse than revolver.
I'm assuming it's a 9mm?
Yeah. So, yeah, that or get another gun. But if he can get the trigger, the spring kit for $150, maybe I'll recommend that to him.
Yeah, I would. I like it. I didn't like really the M&P until she got it, so it makes a big difference.
Oh, it does. I'm sure it would. It was funny because I had six guns set up, and I asked him which gun he wanted to shoot. He said, well, I want to shoot your K22 X-Trim. I said, sure, no problem. So he gets all ready to shoot. He's all lined up in target, goes off, and he looks at me and goes, oh, I forgot how light the trigger pull. I didn't mean for that one to go off. And remember last week when you showed us your target?
Yeah.
Your 1911? This is the first target I did with that K22. You notice that top right, right at the very top there?
Yeah.
That was an excellent discharge. I was all lined up, and that trigger was so light, I didn't expect it to go off either. So it happens. So when I shot the target, I put another round in, and I finished off the 10 shots in the magazine. But the first shot, I threw it.
Yeah. With that, about 2 inches high, for the listeners who can't see.
Yeah, it's about dead center, about just below the sixth ring. Everything else is in the 10 ring, except there's what? 7 tens, 2 nines, and a 7. So it was an excellent target, except for that one flyer. But it was unintentional. I forgot how light the trigger was. So it happens to everybody. So don't feel bad. What else? So we got Kaylee on the line, and we're talking for a bit. And she actually has her hunting license, and she has her PAL. But I didn't realize at the time that she actually had very little range time, because normally what I do when I start a new shooter, I start them on the red dot. That way they're on target, they can see where their hits are going. So I figured, well, since she has some hunting and some shooting experience, I'll put her right on the open sights. So I put her on the X-Cal, the K-22. Not the X-Cal. No, she didn't shoot any center fires. She only shot the center rim fires. So I put her on she put 10 shots. We went down to look at the target, and she had maybe 5 or 6, not even that, maybe 3 on paper, and all the rest were up high to the top. And she shot over the baffle, so 3 into the reflector screen. Which is why we have a rule that we don't let new shooters shoot center fires, because if that would have been a 9mm, it might have actually done some damage. But since it was a 22, it just sprayed the paint. And they monitor that now, because people have been doing so much damage. They spray that backer, and they see who's been hitting it, and they want you to report if you hit it. So I did. I actually said, I didn't look before we started, so I wasn't sure whether, I'm like 99% sure that she actually had a couple shots high.
Yeah.
But she might not have. It might have been done and not reported, but I reported it anyway, just because they watch stuff like that. And we got video surveillance now.
Oh, wow. Did it actually record like the shooting line, though, or did it just record people?
At first, the inside of the clubhouse wasn't done. It was just the property and the clubhouse, not the actual range. And now we have full video inside. There's nothing on the outdoor range. It was just the indoor range that people were doing damage and not reporting it. And, you know, the club had to do it.
Yeah, it's too bad. Too bad that that's the situation that you get into, right?
You know, the rules are simple. Like, George was complaining about his club last week. My club's the exact same way. I cannot wear a holster at any time unless it's a sanctioned club event. I can't practice. We were limited to 5 rounds. That's the rules. That's what I have to follow. So I've never broken it. Like, I've thought, well, not sure, I can go there on Monday night. There's nobody there. Who's going to know? Well, I've never done it because the rule says holsters.
Oh, yeah. There's tons of time. I have the same thing, right? I go to the range all the time. There's no one there. And you always think, yeah, I could get away with it. But just because you can get away with it doesn't make it right. The difference between a law-abiding person and a criminal.
Well, yes and no. It's just different ranges have different rules, and they're there for a reason. And the one way to get kicked out of range is to break the rules. So you don't break the rules. And they're all different. Like, I can go to the Restigouge with Trevor's place, or I go to my buddy's range, and it's a hot range. As soon as I get there, I can put my holster on, just show somebody that it's clear, and I can wear the gun where it should be, on your hip. But
yeah. Yeah, that's the way my range is. Pretty much as long as you can prove some sort of competence, or if you've done a holster qualifier, then you can wear your holster around the range.
And, you know, I can't complain about it for the simple fact that I don't attend the meetings. My club has meetings once a month. I think it's the first Tuesday every month, where some clubs have them once a year, a couple times a year. Ours meetings are once a month, I believe, and a lot of members show up. They're highly attended. And, you know, if I had an issue, I should bring it up to the meetings, and if I had something to say. But since I don't bring it up in the meetings, I really don't have a say in the matter, you know?
Yeah. What's the saying? World ruled by those who show up?
Well, you know, it's an older club, and there's a lot of members that are set in their ways.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just say that. We don't really have any FUDs or any – everybody's usually pretty decent in the club, but – that's the way they want the club run, and that's fine. No big deal. If I want to shoot IPSC, I can go to an IPSC club. But I like the club. I like the way it's run. I like how safe it is and how financially stable it is. So, and it's warm in the wintertime.
Yeah, that's That's pretty nice.
What about you, Mike? What'd you do with guns this week?
Oh, well, I finally got around to replacing that handguard on my AR since I had gotten that upper vice block. So I figured out how to replace the handguard. First time I've ever done that. We'll find out if I did it right. We'll find out if it's just going to, you know, bounce its way off like the last one did. While I did that, I also did my, put my new...
No, you didn't over-torque it this time, right?
Well, that we'll wait and see for that one.
Okay.
It's funny. I have the Allen wrench and I'm tightening it up. And Sarah just says to me, didn't you just get a Torx screwdriver so you don't break these again? Yeah, I did. As I'm sitting there playing with the Allen wrench, tightening it up.
So did you go get your Torx screwdriver after she said it?
No, I just did it snug. But, and then I put on the compensated flash hider. That's what it stands for. I wrote it down. I don't even know what it stands for.
Or the combination thing Matthew was talking about. It does both?
Yeah, it's supposed to. It's by NEA. So if you look at it, it's a little bit longer than my old flash hider. You know, the first half an inch or so is, you know, just solid where it's screwing onto the other barrel. The next half inch, 3/4 inch is... you can see there's two holes on the side, and then there's one hole pointing straight up. And then after that, it looks like someone just attached a regular flash hider on the end of it, like a four-prong flash hider.
What does it retail for?
55, something like that, bucks, that's I think not I spent. No, it wasn't an expensive one.
No, it was actually made in Canada?
It's an NEA one, so I'm assuming it was made in Canada. Northeastern Arms.
I would hope so. There's actually quite a few because we did that show about comps and brakes. There was quite a few actually being made in Canada.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I put that on. And then, yeah, that's pretty much all I ended up doing that day. Played around with that. That was the first time I've ever, I guess you could almost say, installed or assembled an upper. When I had built my AR, I had just bought the upper as a complete set because at the time, prices were skyrocketing for AR parts, and I just wasn't willing to pay that much anymore. And NEA SFRC had a sale on uppers, so Sarah said she'd buy me a complete upper so I'd be done my AR. And since it was my first one, I'd have no complete one if I didn't do it that way. So
it's so nice when your wife has a firearms license, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Well, actually, she wouldn't even need a license for the upper, would she?
No, she wouldn't actually.
It's still nice that she offered to buy it for you, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think she said that was in return for coaching her for IDPA, I think it was. Because she hadn't shot IDPA yet at that time. And she was nervous about going to her first match. So I was giving her coaching on nights and weekends and stuff like that. So,
how's her 1911 running?
It's fixed.
Is it? How so? Did you fix it? Or?
Well, I may have broken it.
Hold on.
But, okay, well, this is unconfirmed. It may be me. It may have been the manufacturer. I'm probably me. When you would pull the trigger, how would I describe it? So you're pulling the trigger, you take out the slack, you kind of hit that wall. And as you're pulling it, when you hit about the 3-pound mark, the trigger would almost, how do I describe, jump a little bit. But the gun wouldn't necessarily go off if you're pulling it really slow. And then at about the 4-pound mark, you keep pulling it, and then the gun would go off nice and crisp. So I felt that before. I didn't really know what it was, and it was kind of funny because you could pull it. Once you kind of got past that jump, if you let go of the trigger, it wouldn't jump again. It would just go at 4 pounds. So I took apart the gun, I looked at it, and it was the sear. So where the sear meets the hammer, what was happening is when you pull the trigger, when it hit about 3 pounds, the sear would jump, but it wouldn't quite release the hammer all the way. It was catching, like just the back end of the sear was catching on the hammer still, and then at 4 pounds it was enough to release the rest of the sear and make the gun go off.
So you think maybe tweaking the sear spring might have?
No, I think
the sear itself.
I don't know. That's why I say I don't know if it was me. I don't know if when I was trying to, you know, slick stuff up, if I might have accidentally changed the angle of that or something like that.
You polished the sear.
I know I polished it, but I knew I could mess it up. So I seem to remember just being like, you know, put a little bit of polish on the Dremel and just zip, you know, one quick pass, maybe two. Just
yeah, that shouldn't have done anything.
Yeah, I didn't think I did enough to do, like, I didn't put it to sandpaper. So that was kind of bugging me. So I took it all apart, and a friend had actually suggested that I take my sear out of my 1911 and put it in hers and see if that fixed the problem. So I tried that, and it fixed the problem. So I knew it was definitely the sear. So I spent a couple hours trying to reshape the sear a little bit to try and give it a bit more, I wouldn't say a curve, but a bit different of an angle. And eventually when I finally got it working, just now it just works great. There's no jump. But here's the thing, what I realized is when I took the edge off, I wasn't eliminating that first jump. What I was eliminating is the sear catching it, I guess you could almost say, for that second trigger pull. So now the trigger pull is down to about 2¾ pounds.
Is it a clean break now, or is it still catching? Well,
it's a clean break.
Okay.
I think out of the like 50 times I tried it, I think I only had it catch once. So I don't know if, and it was right at the beginning, so I don't know if now it's kind of worked in or not. But
now, have you actually live fired it yet?
No, I haven't live fired it yet. I haven't managed to get out to the range yet. So now it's a super light trigger, and even Sarah said that might be too light, so we'll have to play around with the sear spring again and probably make that a little...
There shouldn't be a bump on it at all. It should be nice and smooth, and with your actual edge, all you're doing is just polishing it so it just slides smoother, so there shouldn't be any resistance.
Yeah.
So you probably have a bum sear.
Yeah, and that's what it almost felt like. If you, with my fingernail, I could run it across the sear, and I could almost feel my fingernail catch a little bit. So I didn't know. Either way.
I'm guessing it's a cast part, and it just wasn't polished properly. That's why the bump's there.
It could have been.
Yeah.
Just the way they did it. So either way, it's working great now. Besides that, I've begun the official winter reloading session. So I got out the, 5-gallon bucket full of brass, and I've been sitting there picking through it, sorting all my brass. And then I just loaded all that and throwing it into the tumbler to get it all nice and shiny clean. And then I loaded 50 rounds of 9 with the new 147 grain Campro bullets for Sarah to try out before we go down to Florida. I'm just going to see how Sarah likes them. I was looking at my reloading data, and I noticed that to have the same speed to reach the same power factor, it was quite a drop in pressure by using the 147 versus the 124s that I'm using. So
easier to make power factor with the heavier bullets, I found.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So anyway, so I figure we'll take that to the range, and we'll give that a try and see how Sarah likes it. And hopefully we'll get an answer which one she wants me to load up for Florida, right? So
she'll notice a little bit difference in the recoil, not much, but you will notice a little bit more of a thump with a heavier projectile.
Yeah. But yeah, well, it's also traveling, about 200 feet per second slower, so.
She also might find, too, that with a heavier and faster projectile, it might group better for her.
Yeah.
I find that the faster the 9s go, the better groupings I tend to get with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we need to redo our group testing with her 1911, because last time when we went out to go do it, Sarah got a phone call, and it was a good phone call about work. So she got a little excited.
When are you guys coming to Bowmanville next time?
I don't know. That's just it. We're in the winter lull.
Okay. When you come out here, we'll just go up to the range, and she can bench it and shoot for hours and stay warm.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. As soon as she hears this, she'll probably be jumping all over it.
There's an ante room, so if she wants a quieter place for the baby and it's warm.
Yeah. And I even heard there's a range in Orno. There's a archery range. Apparently they're in the process of building an indoor shooting range, too.
Right now, East Hill Outdoors is building an indoor shooting range. And actually, I was speaking to listener Jason today about it. And The guy's actually holding interviews for people that don't want to apply for it. So I don't have any details because I just heard about it this afternoon. So I'll get a hold of him. I have met the owner once, but that was last year. I do know the guy that runs the gun department there. So maybe I'll have a talk with Russ, see what he says.
Yeah. Yeah, Sarah just said she saw that on Facebook. So
there's some nice archery ranges. I know my brother-in-law belongs to an indoor 3D archery range, and it's a full setup. I've seen pictures of it. It's something else.
Oh, yeah.
Archery is pretty popular around here.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So that's all I did this week in guns. All right. So moving on to guns in the news. Thomas, take story number one.
Well, you know, I started looking for articles in guns in the news. And when I listened to, was it Gun Nation with Doc Wesson? And I'm looking at, when you go in the individual podcast, you can see what the topics are for each show. And everybody had the same topics. And I realized everybody was outsourcing their news from the firearms blog. So everybody had this basically the same story. So I figured, well, let's do something a little bit different this week. Because if I tell you what's happening with, the tallow industries or other stuff that's happening on the firearms blog, you probably already heard it. So what we're going to do this week, we're going to sort of highlight women in shooting sports. So this week we're going to promote the CCFR Gunny Girl calendar. We just got a copy of this thing. It's on sale right now for $20, I think. Tracy said.
I believe that's what it said.
$20.
I think it's on sale for $20, normally $25.
You know, it's a great way to support the CCFR, and actually our own Mary Patrick is Miss February.
Yep.
So we got to look at these. Actually, I have a copy of the calendar. It was funny. I bought that when the Firearms Outlet calendars came out last year. I bought three of them. I gave them all away as gifts because Terry wouldn't let me put them up. So I showed her. I showed her this year's calendar, and she says, "Okay, well, you can leave up your friend Mary up, but everybody else, no." So,
well, this is a very different calendar than the Firearms Outlet one. This is much more.
This is very tastefully done. The girls in the pictures actually own the firearms that they're shooting. Most of them, we would assume. There's one girl that's got a Thompson 45. I want to be friends with her, but. I don't know whether it's a prop or an airsoft, but most of the girls in the pictures, they're all shooters. They're all their own guns. So it's not models holding guns they have no knowledge about. These are experienced hunters and shooters that are out there in the community that support shooting sports, and they, you know, they support women in the field and women in shooting sports. So that's what it is. It's there to celebrate the gunny girls in Canada. It's not there to have scantily clad girls with guns they know nothing about. These are actual real shooters with real guns. So you got $20. Did I put a link in for this thing?
I have a link from last week's show. I'll throw it into this week's show.
Okay, so we'll put a link into the website. Go have a look. There's some really nice, tastefully pictures. Miss September is something special, but everybody else, go have a look. I'm not making any more comments about the girls in the picture. And my vote goes for Mary. I think she's got the nicest picture in there. Just saying.
I feel like there might be a little bit of bias in there.
It's very tastefully done. There's a nice profile shot with her and her air rifle, and there's a nice little cameo thing on the bottom. So, you know, they're all very tastefully done. Just pretty girls with guns doing what they love to do.
Yep.
Not a bunch of models being paid to do it. These are girls that did it on their own to get out there to support the CCFR. So you get $20, order one. Your wife will even let you put this one. She might cover up September, but everybody else is fine.
Oh, all right. Well, story number two, just continuing on, talking about the Gunny Girls, how they've been a part of firearms history for a very long time. Everyone knows about Annie Oakley. There are a few names out there that you may not know. Margaret Thomas Murdoch. Margaret made history in 1976 Montreal Olympic Games, competing in small bore rifle events. She made her mark competing in the same event as men and was the first woman to receive an Olympic medal in shooting events.
Excellent.
Oh boy. Ludmila Pavlichenko. Sorry.
That sounds good. We'll just call her Ludmila.
Okay, sure. Miss L was a sniper in the Soviet Union during World War II. She was made a war hero and became a strong advocate for women in the military. Julie Golub, the team captain for Smith & Wesson shooting team, has won over 120 championship titles and is a former member of the U.S. Army Marksmanship Unit.
See, I didn't know Julie was a former vet.
No, neither did I. I knew she had won a boatload of medals, but...
You should have a look at some of her training videos. She's got a lot of good stuff up there for teaching new shooters, and especially women shooters and children. She's an excellent instructor.
Oh, yeah. I've seen quite a bit of her YouTube videos. She's good.
Oh, yeah. And she's cute.
Yeah. Then there's Kimberly Rhodes. Kimberly Rhodes has competed in 5 Olympiads and has won more medals in Olympic shooting than any American athlete in any sport. She won her 3rd gold medal in Olympic women's skeet shooting in 2012.
Yeah, I've heard about her. She's awesome.
Yeah. Jessie Duff is a loud voice in favor of Second Amendment rights and received the USPSA Practical Shooting Grandmaster title, which few men or women marksmen ever achieve. Wow, that's awesome.
I've seen some videos of her shooting. This lady is awesome.
How do you get the Grandmaster title in USPSA? Do you know?
I don't know anybody who is a Grandmaster. Well, you know, no. Pat Harrison's I think he's a master. I'm not sure if Pat's a Grandmaster.
I wonder if it's like an IDPA, you can get master just by skill, but the only way you can become a designated master is to win a national championship.
I'm not sure.
So maybe that's how...
Because Jesse's a Grandmaster.
Yeah, so I'm wondering maybe to become a Grandmaster in USPSA, you have to win a national match.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
We can message her and ask her.
Yeah. I have a feeling that we'll have much better chance of getting a reply from, Crystal Powers will know. Trevor will know. I'm assuming.
Well, USPA, who would know, actually? I would say Pat Harrison.
Yeah.
He would be the one to know, because he shoots USPA too, also, I think.
Isn't USPSA tied to IPSC in some way?
I think it's almost identical. And of course, it's a fire. A lot of the rules are different.
The way I understood it, and this is mostly just because I heard Pat Harrison and what's his co-host name?
Sorry, Chris Witkowski.
Thank you, because they were talking about there's some disputes between USPSA and IPSC, so it kind of gave the impression to me that they're somehow associated to each other.
They're very, very similar.
Almost like two leagues in one sport. Well, I guess they are really two leagues in one sport, but actually having some sort of ties at the top end of things. Anyways, and now we all get a chance to share our friend Mary Patrick chase her Olympic dream. This former Canadian Army cadet shot extremely well as a junior shooter at Misley last year. Then Mary secured a spot on the Canadian juniors team, and now she's heading back to Misley competing as an adult this year.
Excellent.
Yep. All amazing women out there. And it just goes to show, right? It's not a boy sport anymore.
No, especially nowadays. You find, especially in hunting, I see a lot of families now where the mother is an active hunter and they're introducing the children to hunting. Well, look at Laurie and the Canadian Sportswomen Association.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of girls out there teaching their kids how to hunt, how to field dress, how to process game. They make it a big family event and, you know, really enrich our culture and heritage by doing things like that. So a shout out to all the girls, especially the women hunters out there.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, my aunt, I think my third aunt, I think Teddy's on his third wife or his fourth wife. This one's lasted the longest. He's been married to this one about 25 years. Aunt Heather, lovely, lovely lady. And she mentioned to me a couple of years ago that she actually had her hunting license.
Okay.
Because what they used to do, they used to get all the kids to get their hunting licenses. That way they could all get tags. So she would go hunting with the family. She may not always actually go out in the field. She may stay in the cabin, but they would get all the extra tags. That's the only reason she got her license. So I mentioned to her that we're planning a pheasant hunt and if she'd like to come along. And she got all excited. She went to check her license. She goes, yeah, it's still good. Okay. So my Aunt Heather's going to come pheasant hunting us with us when we came, with Laurie and her group.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've never hunted with her. I've tried to get her shooting. I've taken my nieces and nephews shooting. My uncle is not allowed to go shooting. That's a long story. But I've never taken my Aunt Heather shooting. So I'd like to take her out to the range. And getting her out in the field, that'd be awesome. She's a super nice lady.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of people out there who see hunting as a socially acceptable reason to have a firearm, right? Whereas target shooting, they don't see as socially acceptable. So it makes it a lot easier to convince people to come out shooting, or sorry, to come out hunting for that reason.
This is true, because society has tended to, and the media has tended to put a media spin on anybody that owns a firearm, unless it's hunting, you know, not realizing that it's been one of the biggest competitions in the Olympics since the 1800s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think the aunties really understand how many people actually get out there and compete in shooting sports each weekend in Canada. It's astronomical. I guess we were talking about last week, trying to get into an IPSC match in Ontario. It's not because it's set up improperly. It's because there's so many people that want to shoot, and there's just aren't the facilities for them.
Yeah. I'm surprised it hadn't driven a lot more facilities to open up.
Well, it's funny. I contacted that. Remember, Daniel Bolofsky was mentioning that Mega Range, it was supposed to be opening north in GTA.
Like crowdfunded or whatever.
Yeah, and I had a Facebook page and another page, and I messaged him twice in the summer, a couple times in the summertime, because I wanted to do an update for the show, and I haven't heard anything. He never responded back. So not everybody uses their Facebook page. They just create it for their family members, the kids, but
yeah, they create it just to get the extra attention, but didn't really care to keep it updated. Yeah.
You go on, people that go on Facebook, you look for old high school friends or something, and they haven't actually used Facebook in 5 or 6 years. They set up once, and they've never done it again. So,
yeah, set up, forgot about it. That's the end of it.
So what's our main topic this week?
Main topic is shooting from a rest.
Like laying down and sleeping, or?
Yeah, that's exactly what it means. Shooting while resting.
Yes. Being comfortable in a warm indoor range in the wintertime.
How to convince your spouse that you're just taking your time aiming your shot when really you're just catching a quick nap. No, it's about properly resting your rifles and your pistols for making really accurate shots. To me, this is mostly related to sighting in a firearm. But I assume there are a lot of people out there who use rest to support themselves because they want to make the smallest group possible. And
well, no, the long range precision shooters, they use rests.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, it's to make the most accurate shot possible.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Yeah, so you try to eliminate your motion out of the equation by holding the firearm as still as possible. You're still transmitting some motion when you grip it or when you do your trigger press. But the idea is to move you out of the equation.
Yeah. Yep. So being steady and having a steady rest is a must for any precision shooting. Whether you're just sighting in your 10/22 or long range shooting, having both a front and rear shooting bag will help you stay steady at the bench. Most people will just buy some front and rear bags, but it is not unusual to see a variety of handmade bags and rifle rest on the line.
Well, even at my club, somebody cut up a bunch of blue jeans and stitched them all up and filled them all with sand. They're all there for anybody to use. A couple of people even got the rear bag templates. They basically just have wings, and somebody, last club I was at, made up a whole bunch of templates. And it had them there, and people could either fill them up with sand, you can take them home. So they're easy to make.
Oh, wow. I did not realize it was that easy to make.
And filling them up with sand is the hard part.
What, finding sand?
No,
because it's underneath you. Look
when
down.
When you make the bowl, you make this really, really tiny, tiny hole in the bag. So trying to get all that sand in that tiny, tiny hole has its challenges. So the bigger the hole, the faster the sand's going to go in.
And come out.
And come out. I find when I'm shooting from a bipod or whatever front rest I'm using, I still like to use the rear wind the rear bags, because I find it really helps with my elevation adjustments. Like just putting my hand up there just doesn't do it. You still get the motion, but if I get one of those rear wing bags, I can just slide it back or forth to adjust, get my elevation up there.
Okay, yeah. See, I've always, what I have is a three-legged rest. That's what I'll call it. And you can move it up and down.
Yeah.
And it has like a bit of a U to it, kind of like a front bag, but it is nowhere near as low as a front bag. And
but now, does it have a place in the front to put a bag?
No. Sorry. So there's like three legs.
Yeah.
It moves up and down. And on the top of it, it almost like a front bag in the sense that it has like a U shape to it. And it's not sand, but it's some sort of soft material.
Okay, so it has an actual bag built into the rest.
Yeah, built into it.
Yeah, because I have an old Hops three-legged front stand, and it didn't come with a bag. You have to actually put your own bag on it and secure your own bag on the rest.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's what I have. So I've always just done the hand thing for the back side, just putting your hand underneath and being able to flex and squeeze to make the gun go up and down.
Yeah, but I find like for real precision, I like the rear bag, because even if I just got my hand in there, just my breathing or whatever motion, I can still see the front sight going up and down, especially at 100 yards. You can really notice it. But when you put the bag in there, all of a sudden the motion just stops.
Yeah.
That's my suggestion. You can do it with a bipod in the front or just a front rest and hold your hand up underneath it. But if you really want to dial it in and get, you know, a tight, tight grouping, eliminate yourself and put a rear bag. You can still hang on to it, but use the bag for the rest.
Well, the way I've YouTube, I don't know where, it's been so long since I quote unquote learned how to do it. It kind of said that you put the rear bag underneath, but you still grab onto it, and to adjust your up and down, you just squeeze the bag.
I guess that squeezing the bag would do it too.
Yeah,
I still hang on to it and everything. And if I just move it back a little bit, I guess I could. I guess squeezing would do the same thing too.
Yeah. So if you were to do a bipod setup, do you have any suggestions for that?
With my bipod, I use the rear bag.
No,
I get as low as I can. What type of bipod are you talking about, first of all? Because there's the one I would really suggest staying away from. You can see them online for 10, 15 bucks. Is those cheap plastic barrel clamp-on bipods?
Yeah.
They're garbage. Throw them away. First of all, the spring tension isn't enough to clamp it on your barrel. And your barrel's going to start heating up, especially if you have a hot gun like, say, an AR. You're going to toast that plastic thing pretty, pretty quick. And they're really garbage. They don't lock on. Your gun's going to flop around. You're better off just to go out and buy an actual bipod.
Okay, so what are some things that you should look for in a bipod?
Well, most of them attach to the swivel stud. So you need a swivel stud on your gun, because a lot of guns nowadays don't come with a swivel stud. So if you go get a bipod, you're going to have to buy a swivel stud if there's not one included. I like one that has a swivel head. Like mine, I have a Harris S. So I can rotate it left or right. There are some that are new ones out now that you can actually rotate it as well too, but I just prefer the Harris with the rotating head. That way, if I'm shooting prone outside and have uneven ground, I can just adjust accordingly. Leg height's up to you. I think mine are the 9-16 or 6-13. There are some longer legs if you plan on shooting sitting down. You may want taller bipods for a sitting down hold. If you're doing a lot of sit-down bench sitting, there are some smaller bipods that you can get. I personally like the Harris bipods, but I see a lot of those Champion bipods for about half the price.
Them. Yeah, I see them everywhere, at least on the store shelves. But
yeah, they're just Chinese. But I've never heard anything about them. I've never heard any complaints about them. So
yeah, yeah, and those are all ones that will fold with spring tension.
Yeah, they all lock up with the spring tension. It was funny. It was when I was shooting at the Union Club. I was the RO in the outdoor range, and one of the guys that came out was Exxon Forces. He was shooting some high-powered rifle, and he had his bipod on, but he didn't have it on tight, and he had his bipod on backwards. And I looked at him, and I said, "You got your bipod backwards?" He goes, "Well, no, I shoot it that way." I said, "Yeah, but when you recoil, you're going to be kicking the legs off." And that's how he competes with his bipod backwards.
Huh.
I said, think about it. I said, your legs are locked. So when you recoil, the legs stay locked. The way you've got it, if you lean forward at all during that shot, your legs are going to cave in and go down.
Oh, yeah. When you're putting your own body weight into the gun, you're going to collapse.
If he puts any body weight, he leans into it, it's going to collapse.
Yeah. I was thinking, when you said the recoil, I was thinking, no, the gun's going to go back and the legs are going to go forward. Recoil would make him go up.
Yeah, make him go up. But as soon as he repositions, if he leans forward at all, it's just going to collapse and go into itself. But if you have it properly, it's just going to basically, it's going to go up if it recoils at all.
Yeah.
But if you have the legs the other way, you risk the possibility of it folding on you. So.
Yeah.
And I found something else too when I was looking at the picture for this. The only problem with the Harris is that your adjustment for the swivel is this big curled nut in the front. And it's kind of tricky to get at, especially if you're actually shooting and you want to adjust it, then you have to reach out ahead. There's a little tiny lever you can buy called an S lever or S lever, whatever. And it replaces the front locking lock. And the plastic one's like $12 at Brownells, or you can get a metal one for like $30. I never knew they were there. It's a great idea.
Yeah, simple little tool. I guess you can add on.
Yeah, if it's not adjusting, you can just reach forward and touch your bipod and do an adjustment instead of having to reach. You need to just straight lever back and forth. So
yeah,
can be looking at one of those.
So is there any benefit to having the sling swivel stud attachment versus something like someone who had an AR and just getting the straight up Picatinny attachment?
No, that would work too, because it's on your handguard, right?
Yeah, it would be attached to your handguard.
Because I've seen it where you can actually get a Picatinny attachment with a stud built into it. And I'm sure if you've got a Picatinny attachment, that would be secure too.
Yeah. Okay.
Other people use other things for support. Some of the AR shooters like the 30-round magazine because it acts like a monopod. It keeps it shooting up.
Yeah. And you always have that on you, right?
Yeah, it's always on there. That's the advantage of a bipod. You can keep it on there. I've seen people with monopods as walking sticks. So you're using this gun as a walking stick through the bush, but then when you want to take your shot, you got to take your... I'm sure I have a quick release camera adapter, so you can probably get the same thing on your rifle. But you still have to take your rifle over your shoulder, set up your monopod, get it locked in. So I guess if you're prairie dog hunting, something where you're not moving around all day, I guess a monopod would work too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've seen those monopods, but it just had like a V at the top.
Yeah.
Where you just rest your rifle in between.
So you have to, I have a monopod for photography, but I do have an adapter so I could run it on my gun. So what it is on, and I'm not sure if this one has it, my monopod actually has a little foot clamp. So there's actually an 8 or 9 inch steel U-bracket that comes off the foot, as well as the stake and the rubber foot. So when you put it in the ground, you can actually put your foot on it and lock it into place.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But the one I saw for hunting didn't have that, and all it had was the V, so it wasn't actually securely attached. You have to actually put your hand around the stock and the monopod at the same time, I think.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I guess the idea is that you'd hold the monopod with one hand, you rest the gun on it, and probably just the weight of the gun. You probably wouldn't have to hold on to the monopod, right, if you just hold the weight of the gun up, because it's not meant to be a, standing at the range, taking shots, sighting in your rifle. It's meant to be more of a, you're hiking through the woods, and there's the deer on the other side of the creek.
Yeah, it's a quick shot, a quick setup for a steady sight picture. With walking sticks, I've seen those lately too, where it just comes up like a crisscross.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the shooting sticks.
Yeah, the shooting sticks.
Yeah, I have a set of those and they're supposed to be meant for sitting. Like you can get them in various lengths, right?
Yeah, but all that stuff, that's mostly for hunting. On the range, you know, you're better off with, because who wants to bring sandbags and stuff hunting? You just want to do that.
Yeah, something a little bit more steady, right? Yeah, a lot of those other ideas are all things that are meant to try and get you the best shot you can while you're out in the woods hunting.
Yeah, so you want something, if you're going to get some type of support, get it geared towards what your purpose is going to be. If you can get something for hunting in the field, then get that. If you want something to do precision shooting and to really dial in your rifle, then get something that you can run on a bench. And you know, one of the good deals out there for the money For the same money as going out and buying 4 or 5 sandbags, you can go out and buy, what's it called? MTM Predator Rest, $67.99 at Bass Pro up in Vaughan. And it, you know, it does what it's supposed to do. It rests a rifle. It's not supposed to stop recoil. It's not supposed to stay in place shot after shot. It's just a lightweight rest that's easy to carry around. And I can tell you for a fact, it does not stop recoil. I've had one for 5 or 6 years now, and I've never shot anything bigger than, no, I shot my 44 lever action, which was fine because it was a heavier gun. But when I shot my Savage Axis in 270 out of that thing, and the Axis is an ultra lightweight gun. And the first shot I fired at that thing, that rifle shot straight up out of the rest, and I had to catch it with my left hand when it came down. It jumped right out. So wow. It's not a lead sled. You don't want to be putting something that's really hard kicking and super light. If you do, you got to hang on to it because it's just meant to steady the rifle. It's not meant to keep it in place once you fire it.
Yeah, but it had a very different purpose, I see, than a lead sled, right? Because like this is light, so it's a lot easier for someone to move around. Yeah, it doesn't soak up the recoil like him. You know, wouldn't it be nice? Yeah, but it's also nice to not have to lug around something that's 50 pounds.
Well, it's for the money, it's a good deal because it has 4-point contact systems. You get a pretty solid base on it. The gun's barrel and buttstock are firmly cradled in a rubber shooting bag. And the two-piece allows you allows the bag to be removed. You can separate the two pieces. So you can take off the back end and you can use the front end just as a pistol rest.
Yeah.
And it's adjustable for height and barrel length and everything. So a lot of times if I'm going up to dial in a 22 or something at the outdoor range, I'll just show it in the car.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah. I'm actually looking at possibly buying one of these now just because of the pistol rest part of it. Just because I always thought, because it's my our range's pistol rest, quote unquote, that we have. It's literally like 2x4s nailed together and they go, yeah, just rest it on that.
Now, the advantage of this pistol rest compared to what you're telling me that you have, because I have something similar, when you want to lower it, you have to rest, pull the barrel off the front of the rest and then turn it around and then put it back down?
The one that I have at the range?
Yeah.
No, this is two pieces of wood nailed together. Never going to move again.
Well,
if you want to adjust like your vertical, like what I end up doing is I end up going around the front of the range and you find like all the splinters of wood. So I find one that starts skinny and gets thicker as it goes, and I stick it behind in the back of it, underneath it. So if I need to move the gun, the point of aim down, I just push it in further so it will lift the back up further and further.
Oh, some really fine adjustments on that thing then, eh?
Yeah. And the worst part is if you do that, then all of a sudden the thing will rock from side to side because you just put a piece of wood underneath it.
Well, we have a pistol rest at my club that I like to use, and it's height adjustable, and it's got a locking nut on it. But when you want it, if you get all set up, you need to lower it. You have to take your muzzle off the rest, and you have to spin it around, lock it down, and then bring it on. Is it high enough, low enough? Nope, you got to take it off. The nice thing about the Predator, you can do it two ways. There's a locking collar, or there's just a there's a locking ring and a locker collar. If you want to do a major adjustment, like not a fine-tune adjustment, you don't have to take your muzzle off and spin it around. You just unloosen the collar, the whole thing drops right down, and your gun stays in place.
Oh, that is nice. But that's my big desire to get one of these. Mind you, I've always sighted in my rifles, not the most super accurate. Like my AR, people always say, well, how accurate is it? Well, I don't really know because I don't put it in a bench and find out. It's accurate enough to do 3-gun shooting, right?
See, I'm the exact opposite. When I get a new gun, I try to squeeze the most accuracy I can out of it.
Yeah.
Neighbor John and I both built our 10-22s, and we did everything to them. And that's what we would do. We would go up to the range, even in the indoor range, 2 separate benches. So his motion doesn't interfere with my bench. We rock solid those things. We put targets up half the size of a thumbtack. I mean, the most micro, smallest target you can see. And of course, my scope's a 24 power, so I can see pretty good anyway. And we just try to get rid of every motion that we can create and keep the gun as still as we possibly can without using a lead sled or strapping it down. And that's what we like to do, try to get each bullet on top of each other.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think it'd be awesome to be able to do that. I just haven't reached that level yet.
But any gun I buy, as soon as I get it, first chance I go to the range and I bench it. And I see what it does. I see where it's grouping from the store, and then I do the adjustments. Because if it's not going to shoot really tight at benched, it's not going to do very well in the competition.
No. When you, as you say, when you first buy the gun and you bring it home, do you put like your, you know, your highest power scope on it to test it right off the bat?
I don't usually put a different scope on. If I get a firearm, I like to keep a scope on a rifle for that rifle, unless I really have to switch it. Like I won't take my my Bosch and Lohm 24 power and put it on a rifle just to test the accuracy of that rifle.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Yeah, no, but I will, like, if I, any optics I put on are usually half decent glass, and I'll do everything I can to see how tight I can shoot groups.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we keep mentioning the lead sled. Do you want to explain what the lead sled is?
Lead sled is, actually, they got a new one out. It's called it Lead Sled DFT. I think basically what it did, they took the original lead sled and they improved the frame a little bit. They have a dual frame technology and a specially constructed front rest bag and a foam line rear cradles that solidly stabilizes your rifle or shotgun. So this thing is designed to eliminate vibration and felt recoil. It is massive. On its own, I think it weighs 25 pounds. You've got rear elevation knobs that make 2-inch adjustments for centering. It's all one-handed operation. You've got baffle trays that can hold 100 pounds of lead. So usually if somebody's going to set up a lead sled, they're going to test a couple different guns. And you tell your buddies, hey, I'm bringing up the lead sled. And everybody brings up their guns. Because we actually had one at the club, and it takes about 20 minutes, half hour to set up. Wow. Because you got to get it out and secure that down. Then you've got 100 pounds worth of whatever weight you want. But they work. They really work. I was testing JT1 Weatherby Vanguard 223 bolt action rifle. And Jim made up some of his hand loads at 100 yards with a 3x9 scope. So I'm not going to be able to see it really, really, really close. But I have an idea where the target is. I fired 3 shots in that lead sled. The two of the shots were touching. The other shot was right parallel to the first shot, maybe a quarter inch. It was one of the tightest little groups I'd ever seen. And that gun didn't move. Like, the lead sled really did a good job of keeping it. It's like it's like the ransom rest for rifles, I would say. It's one thing designed to steady the rifle and reduce the recoil.
Oh, yeah. And I imagine something like that would be amazing for people who, if you're hunting with like a 300 Win Mag or something like that, something that has a lot of recoil, or if you're sighting in your shotgun with slugs, instead of putting, you know, a dozen round down range to sight it in, or even just to confirm that your sights are still on target from last year, and you're putting a bunch of round down, I imagine it would save your shoulder just for that purpose alone.
Oh, yeah. If you're shooting any big kicking calibers, like you said, slugs, or even 3.5-inch bird load, you want to pattern your shotgun, it's not a bad place to do it either.
Yeah, I remember sighting in, or checking my sights on my shotgun when I was shooting slugs through it. And yeah, after a dozen rounds. Yeah, because I was with a new barrel.
Just because it says 3.5-inch doesn't mean you have to use 3.5-inch. 3-inch will give you 3-inch will give you this almost the same payload, and it'll still hurt.
They were 3-inch. It was my Mossberg 500, so it only takes up to 3-inch.
Oh yeah, that's a light gun, so it's gonna kick anyway.
Yeah. So I mean, after putting like a dozen round down range to get it sighted in, like by the end, I was thinking to myself, like, I'm going to develop a flinch from shooting this. And after I was done, I think like the next day, my whole shoulder was bruised because I didn't have anything to absorb any of that recoil.
I had my Benelli Nova is 3.5 inch. And the first time I took that out, I bought 3.5 inch slugs. And I really want the 5-pack. I'm like, afterwards, oh my God. So I went out.
Did you make it through all five?
Oh yeah, I shot them all. And actually it grouped pretty good. I had 50 yards with the Ghost Ring sights. I'm amazed at how well it actually grouped. So then I went out and I got some 3-inch and they're just as bad. I really like the ultra low velocity Remington slugs. They're really nice. But I went out and I bought the recoil reducer, and the bracket and the recoil reducer alone was $100 for the shotgun. And it does make a big difference. Instead of a real fast jab, it's more of a slower push, but you still get the recoil. You're only adding a little bit of weight to the gun. Yeah. But I took it out because I didn't like the extra weight it added to the gun.
Yeah.
For competition, I just took it out because I'm only shooting bird loads through it. But if I'm going to shoot slugs through it, I'm putting that recoil reducer back in.
Yeah, makes sense. All right. Are there any other sights or... We didn't really talk a whole heck of a lot about pistol rest. Besides the powder ones, are there very many other options for you?
There's a lot of, you'll see a lot of fixed sight ones.
What do you mean by
fixed sight? We have 4 or 5 of the club. They're different sizes. They're hard compressed foam, or you can get the pistol rest that, as I said, has the big U-bracket on the screw that you have to get up. But you can use anything you want for pistol rest. So if you want to make your own sandbags or whatever, the only thing, if you're shooting revolvers over sandbags, you got to be careful, because that BC gap will tear apart even the finest leathers really quick. I can tell you from experience. I'm shooting one day, and I actually was a new load, and I'm benching because the 44 kicks like hell. And I'm getting the new load, I'm firing a few shots, and I think, wow, it's awfully windy today. I got sand hit me, and I fire a few more shots because, man, look at all the sand. And I realized there's no wind at all. I'd severed my shooting bag, and every time I fired a shot, I was blowing sand all over the place.
Yeah, I'm just quickly looking online. Yeah, there's not nearly as much, it seems like, in the way of pistol rest. I just question why that. I guess there's just not as much demand for a pistol rest.
Well, with the pistol, you're only actually resting the muzzle. You're not resting the rest of the gun like you were with the rifle. So most of them are just some type of adjustable front bracket just to.
Yeah. Yeah, most pistol rest. Yeah, they also have somewhere for you to put the butt of the gun on too. Just to take out you as much as possible, right?
Yeah.
But
I've used the sandbags in the past for my pistols. I like using the Predator. That works out well too. But at my club, we have a really nice pistol rest that I like to use. I think somebody made it up. It was whoever made it did a really good job.
Yeah, like I said, my pistol rest at my range is 2 pieces of wood nailed together, never to be moved again, and they're frustrating to work with. Because as you're shooting, you can feel the whole thing kind of sway.
Well, if you get a chance, pick up one of those Predator rests.
Yeah, I'm looking at them. They're sold at Cabela's, so I'm thinking about, and they're not too expensive. They're actually quite reasonable for the fact that you get a rifle rest and a pistol rest out of it. So.
And they haven't gone up much because where they want, I think I bought mine 8-9 years ago, and I think I paid $50. So they haven't gone up a lot.
No, I think they're still like $69.99 or something like that. Under $70.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So,
but you can get like we were talking about the top lead sled. You can also get a base model for $139 because the full lead sled's $319. For the newest model, but you can get the base model for $139, and they have a package deal where you get ear and eye protection, electronic ears for $189. But it depends what your needs are. Like if you're going to be shooting the high kicking stuff, sure, get a lead sled. If you're just setting in some pistols and some
it's going to be the odd rifle.
Now,
like out of now, besides shooting my shotgun with slugs in it. really, it's my biggest caliber that I have is 223. So, and that thing doesn't recoil enough to be worth buying a lead sled for.
No, I think the biggest I have is my 270. I sold my, well, that's not true. I've got the 44 in the lever action, but it's comfortable to shoot. It's just a pain to cycle on the rest. Any rest will have the same thing. You have to lift it off, cycle it, then put it back on the rest. But
yeah,
it still gives it a stable hold.
Yeah. with that said, I almost bought a 308 this week, so we'll see how that goes.
Oh, does Sarah know?
Yeah.
Okay.
I came home and I said, guess what? She said, you bought another gun. Like, how did you know? How did you know? I was looking at him. I'm like, no, I didn't actually buy one, but I was looking.
Oh, she knows you. She knows you.
Oh, I know.
you know what I did? My my mom got me the Buck 110 camper, or Hunter. Sorry, 110 camper for 110 Hunter for Christmas. Then I went over to Canadian Tire, and I found this beautiful little buck knife being cleared out, made in USA for $20. So I went on the Buck website. You know, they have a custom shop. You can order a custom knife from Buck. You can pick the blade material. There's only about five or six knives they offer. They offer it on the 110, the Ranger, and a couple of 500 series. You can get the SV30 blade if you want. You can get nickel bolsters and nickel rivets or brass. You can choose what type of wood you want on the grips. You can get it engraved. So I whine really loudly. And I have a custom.
You hemmed and hawed loud enough for Terry to hear you?
Extremely loud, actually. I think she might say almost whined. I don't know. I wouldn't go that far, but there might have been a little bit of whining involved. And she ordered me a knife from the custom shop.
Oh, wow. That's nice of her. So what did you end up getting?
I got the 112 Ranger. And I didn't go for the SV30 because I've had lots of bucks and there's nothing wrong with their 420HC steel. It's very easy to sharpen, doesn't stain. Like I've had my 119 downstairs for 20 years, 25 years. Not a mark on it. It's in great shape. Yeah, so I took instead of the SV30, I took the regular H420, but I also got the high polish blade. Because even with this little knife, you can see the grinding marks from the grinding wheel when they put the edge on the hollow ground of this thing. I want the high polish. There's no lines in it whatsoever. Mirror polish blade to look into. And then since I was going to get that high polish, I went for the nickel bolsters instead of the brass. And then I went for nickel rivets as well, too. And I went for an indigo blue wood. A laminate indigo blue. It'll look really cool. The only problem is it's going to be so pretty, I'm probably not going to want to use it. It's probably going to stay in my safe.
That's what I was just thinking, right? Yeah. I mean, it's the same concept, right? Of buying if you were to go out and buy Korth 1911 or something like that, or one of their revolvers, are you ever going to actually take out a $4,000 gun and shoot it?
Well, you might do it, but you're not going to let a lot of other people try it.
No.
Oh, the gun envy I had was at the charity shoot when I just blanked on his first name. The guy from Ronin Sports, he's the importer for Wilson Combat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He had some. I'm trying to think, was it Wilson Combat or Les Bear? No, it was Wilson Combat. He had his own personal high-end Wilson Combat at the charity shoot. Oh, my God, but did I want to shoot it? You let me handle it all I want. And you offered to let me shoot it, but we couldn't. We were too busy to be shooting.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I just sort of – he said, no, go ahead, pick it up. I said, no, I don't want to. Because why? Because I'm going to want it.
And I'll break it.
No, I don't want to. Go ahead. And so I took all the rings off my fingers, and then picked it up, and I'm trying not to drool on it, so I'm wiping all my drool off it. And the fit and finish on this thing, and the lockup, the frame to slide fit was just rock. Like nothing, no play, nothing. And I gave him my Kimber's, got just a ting, just a little bit. This thing was nothing, ball bearings, just rock solid ball bearings. So If you want some high-end 1911s, go speak to Ronin Sports.
Yeah.
He's got some nice guns.
If you want to become poor very quickly.
I don't think he's poor. He had one of the most beautiful houses I've ever seen, too. He's got a gorgeous home.
Well, I just mean you can drop bucks. More on, you know, a Wilson Combat or a Les Baird 1911 than you could drop on what I would consider most high-end rifles.
Or a 10 grand easy. You want a top end. Like most of their production guns, you're going to get 3,500 to 4,500. You want something a little bit fancier, you're going up 55 to 65. You want engraving and all fancy stuff and wait 2 years, 10 grand plus.
Oh, yeah. It's almost like when we were talking to Jason Philp about the shotguns. Right? You can go from, you know, your Mossberg 500 to go out shooting, to your over-under that you can find for $1,000, $2,000. And then next thing you know, people are talking about, you know, $35,000 shotguns.
I have a friend I haven't seen for a few years. He lives out in Coburg. And all he collects is British side-by-sides.
Oh, wow.
This guy has some absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous firearms. And they're safe queens. He does bring them out, shoots them, cleans them up, and puts it away. So he can shoot a different gun every week so he doesn't damage. He's got so many, he can rotate the stock. But I used to love it when Carl pulled up. Like, Carl, what you got this week? One time he pulled up when we were at the charity shoot at Lance. They had a reproduction cannon.
Yeah.
No. Carl has a real cannon. He's got an actual cannon. It was a signaling cannon, but it's an actual signaling cannon off one of King George's ships. And he has the, what do you call the bottom, the cradle or the carriage? He made a full reproduction carriage, and he would bring this thing up to the range. No projectiles, just powder. And it was a hoot to shoot. What you bring this week, Carl? Oh, this week, guys, I bought a cannon. And he did.
Oh, that beats the whenever Sarah goes and does her cowboy matches, they always do the inaugural. They shoot off a cannon before the match, but all it is this mock setup with a firecracker in it.
Is it?
So it shoots off this like little firecracker and sticks into the burn, and poof.
That's it. That tradition has slowly died.
Yeah, actually, I think it's a bear banger. That's what it is that they put in it.
Bear bangers are pretty loud.
Yeah. You know when the cannon goes off.
Yeah.
It's not your traditional cannon, because when it goes off, it's not loud. It's when it hits the berm and then boom, goes off then.
It's like, poof, kaboom!
Yeah.
And the flash is quite exciting too.
Well, these are always done during the daylight hours, so you never actually see any flash, but yeah.
If you shoot it straight up in the air, when it comes down to about a 50 yards, they tend to go off.
I've never actually shot one.
They're nice in an auto. Put 5 in an auto loader, shoot them up in the air as fast as you can. You get 5 noises of it going off and 5 noises of it going off.
Sarah does have a semi-auto shotgun.
20 gauge.
Might have to look around next time I'm at Cabela's meet when I'm looking at that rest.
Does she listen to the show?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Terry doesn't, thank God.
Nope. Anyways, back to the main topic. Anything else you had left to say about shooting rest or anything else?
You know, if you don't have it, if you can't afford it, go buy a couple sandbags. If you can get a couple bucks and you can afford the Predator rest, it really makes a difference for dialing in your rifles.
Yeah. Yep. All right, so moving on to events. I'll take the first one here.
I put this one in just for George, eh? Like, we have to tell George about this event.
They're a requirement, though. So this is the AR-15 Basics course, and it's March 11th, and it's Ragnarok Tactical. So it's Saturday, March 11th, 8 to 5. It's in Kitchener, Ontario. It's currently, this is a Facebook post that we stole online, so I'll post the Facebook and link.
Well, I put the link in there because that's also the same group that's doing the carbine operator course the day before the charity shoot.
Yes.
So then on, I guess it'd be Friday, July 7th, if I can try to pronounce this myself, Ragnar Corps Tactical. See, I guess. We'll just call it tactical, okay? They have a carbine, same as last year for the charity shoot. Excuse me. Last year we had RJ. This year, the guys have a carbine operator course. So on July 7th, between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m., it'll be at the Kitchener, Ontario, same location. The price for the carbine operator course is $176. I'm not sure of the AR-15 course. I would assume it's similar, but we put links to both events in the show notes if you want to go in. You know, if you're new to the AR and you just want to learn how to use a platform, I would go check it out.
Yeah. Do we know the carbine operator course? Is that meant to be a basics introductory level course as well, or that...
Well, I'm assuming by the title, since it says AR-15 Basic Courses, that's what it is.
Well, that's for the first event. I'm talking about for the one on July 7th before the charity
shoot. Oh, the charity shoot. I'm sure that would be for the more advanced shooter.
Well, I'm just curious so that we can promote it as such, right? So, because I'm sure there are some people out there who don't have a lot of experience with their AR who might want to take a course. We don't want to accidentally promote an advanced course to them. Vice versa, we don't want to promote advanced course to what that's actually a beginner course and have people be disappointed when they go.
Well, why don't we contact Gavin from the Canadian Patriot podcast, because he actually responded with the price on it, and maybe have him on the show to talk about it.
You want to read what you wrote down there for price again?
Well, this is Gavin's quote, $176.99 plus theft.
Okay.
Taxation is theft. So I copied and pasted exactly what he said because I agree with it.
I saw that in there.
Or we can contact Garvin or contact the instructor and maybe have them come on and talk about the course a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm sure those guys are promoting it. I haven't listened to one of their podcasts for over a month now, so I'm not sure what they're promoting.
Yeah. Yep. And then the last event is, as we previously said, the 7th Annual Canadian Podcasters Charity Shoot on July 8th. And this one said it's at the Guelph Rod and Gun Club. I'm assuming this is the same place as the AR course, but maybe not.
No, hang on, because I think the AR course is in Kitchener.
It said Kitchener. Well, okay, Kitchener, so Kitchener and Guelph are side by side, so.
I can't click on it to find out for sure, because I know the charity shoot is at the Guelph Club. That's a different club altogether. I think they are using, because they did use a different club when they had their charity shoot last month.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We'll ask them.
Yep, we'll ask them, and we'll get an answer, and we'll get back to the listeners about that. All right, so event number 4, got your 6, waiting on Mr. Uzi. Way to just throw him under the bus again.
You know, it's like trying to communicate with him sometimes. He's sucking in all those gas fumes and working at the gas plant. Sometimes he's hard to get a hold of. But he says once he gets more information lined up, we'll actually have him on the show to talk about it, because I know he still has to get a few things lined up still.
Yeah.
And I want to hear how last year's event went too, because he shot that. So I wouldn't mind getting some updates on that too.
Yeah. So listener email. We got a ton of emails this week. It was quite a good week. I'm quite happy about that.
Now, before we start, Terry's a gentleman that asked for pictures, right?
Yes.
Thank you, Terry. When we had the geeks on last week, we mentioned as many guns as possible. Just so Mike would have to look up every single picture and put it on. And now when I put up the show notes, I get asked, like, Mike, you got to put pictures. So because of you, Mike's getting paid overtime.
Yeah, time and a half of zero, still zero.
But that was my goal. Let's mention as many guns as we can. That way Mike has to find them all and put them in the show notes.
Yeah, I know. If you want to see what that looks like, go to newshootercanada.ca and
pull up the Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns episodes.
Yeah, and then just start scrolling and scrolling.
Scrolling.
and scrolling. There's so much stuff in there.
So thanks, Terry.
So this one's from Terry. It's a George and other host. Have you guys ever discussed the best practices for being pulled over by the police with your non-restricted or restricted firearms in the trunk? Do you present your PAL license at the time of being pulled over, or do you guys not discuss it until the police ask?
You're not required to speak to the police at all. Yeah. When you get pulled over for a moving violation, by law, you're only required to show them your driver's license. You're not allowed. You don't have to interact with them. You don't have to answer any questions. Just be polite and don't offer any information. Don't say, I got guns in the car. See, yes, sir. No, sir. Here's my license. And that's it.
And also don't lie. Because you don't have to volunteer the information that you have guns doesn't mean if they ask you, do you have a gun in the car, don't lie.
Now, that said, if he pulls you over for a moving violation, him asking you what personal property you have in your vehicle is a Chapter 7 violation, and he knows it. If you get pulled over in the Highway Traffic Act, they are required to keep their traffic questions to the Highway Traffic Act. But they're fishermen. That's their job. So they will fish, and they will throw out lines, and they will try to get you hooked. So your best bet is not to say anything.
Yeah.
If he doesn't ask about the guns or anything, then don't volunteer it. And if he does ask, it's an improper question. And he says, I'm sorry, Constable, so that's a Chapter 7 violation. You shouldn't be asking that. And they don't know what to do when you say that. I went online about 10 years ago, and there was a court case out in Alberta where the police officer pulled over a car. And in the car, on the passenger side on the floor, there was a knapsack. And the officer's questioning changed from the moving violation to the contents of the knapsack, which it was inappropriate. And there was stuff in the knapsack he shouldn't have had. But it all got thrown out because the question of even asking what was in the knapsack is an improper question.
Now, with that said, I think it's different if you're talking to MNR, Ministry of Natural Resources.
Different story altogether.
Yeah, because
under the Fish and Game Act, they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, pretty much. So if you're wearing a camo jacket, they can pretty much assume that you were out hunting, and they can also assume that you were poaching. So they have the ability to search your vehicle for evidence of you poaching, which can lead to searching of your firearms as well.
This is true. So what I do is I don't wear any hunting clothes in the car.
Well, really, I don't know who's wearing... Well, I mean, unless you just wear hunting clothes as a, I don't know, a fashion statement. Really, even when I go hunting, I'm not wearing any of it. I have it all in an airtight bin in the back because I don't want the smell of the gas from stopping at the gas station or, you know, the smell of my buddy smoking in the truck. You know, I don't want that all over my hunting clothes when I go out there. So it's not... I'm not wearing it anyways.
My favorite quote is from Ed Berlew from the CCSA, who represents the CCSA. Ed Berlew says, duct tape is your friend. Use it. You don't have to say anything. Technically, he pulls over. You give him your license, insurance. You don't have to answer any questions that he asks you. But, you know, it depends on the questions. If he says, where are you coming from tonight? Well, that's none of his business where you're coming from. Where are you going to tonight? It also is none of his business. Insurance, registration, if you had anything to drink tonight, sir, that's it. Everything else is a fishing trip that he's not supposed to even ask you, but that's their job. That's how they catch people.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so
to answer your questions, don't say no, keep them locked up out of sight, and don't say a word unless he actually asks you, and they say, it's not your business. It's not.
Yeah, don't lie, but you can avoid the question.
Yeah, lying is the worst thing you can do because then they have this thing called automatic attitude that kicks in. They don't like being lied to. If you're honest and open most of the time, the cops are going to give you a break, something minor. But if you lie to them or if you are rude or ignorant to them, you're going to get what you're going to get what you pay for.
All right, so this next email is from Darby. I thought the Chuck Norris joke was great. Nice deadpan delivery. So that's one in the pro column for George. I'm sure he's jumping up and down, all excited right now.
George was so upset that we didn't get it.
I know. He was so heartbroken. All right. Do you want to take this next email?
Sure. Next one says, Dear Santa, I want to write you after the Christmas rush had died down and you had a bit of time to rest. It seems that Jack Frost may have gained access to your gift bag and switched my 10mm carbine to a 43-inch flat screen TV. I'm not angry with him, as I get to caress my AR-15 while watching the Die Hard in HD now. I managed to drive around all that reindeer poop on I-75 on Wednesday. Did Rudolph eat some bad mushrooms on his way around to Toledo? What a mess. Don't forget that all professional drivers aren't as evil as Cowboy George. Please ask. Please catch the venison?
The venison?
That must be American venison. Nope, that's E.T. though. Please ask the venison to cut us a break, will ya? Y'all have a great new year, E.T. Etienne Tremblay. Did I pronounce it correct?
Etienne. Okay. Etienne Tremblay.
I tried, E.T. I really tried.
I believe that's correct. Now, he can email us the show and tell us that we did it wrong both times. So,
and he's actually the CCFR rep in Pontiac.
Excellent. Yeah, I did not know that until we got this email. All right, so I'll take the next email. It says, hey guys, no Chuck Norris jokes aren't funny. And yes. Just to throw another wrench in the mix, I was looking to get my hunting license after hearing about your hunt and noticed that if you don't have your PAL, there is an option to take a short course, say 2 hours, that would allow you to hunt. I assume that it's with someone with a valid PAL. Sorry, George, I guess Wanda might come on the hunt. Hope all is good. Thanks for the show, Sharp 97.
I'd like Wanda to come on, and George couldn't use Con.
I want Wanda to come so much just so that George has to find his own shotgun.
He may have to buy his own.
Oh, something tells me he won't buy his own. He'll just bring his side-by-side from cowboy shooting.
Yeah, he's too cheap.
Yeah, he's not going to buy a gun. That'd be like buying parts for an AR. All right, you want to take this next email?
So I'm just curious about his option he was talking about here. My hunting license, if you're hearing that you hunt and notice that you don't have to have a PAL, there's an option to take a short course that would allow you to hunt. So is that through the ministry or is that something offered just by the...
I have no idea. I've never heard of this. I will look into this while you read the next email.
Next email. Love you guys. Thanks for making it easier for my hubby to get me shooting. Kelly was wondering, I'm assuming Kelly is the actual mister in this one. Kelly was wondering if you have any more info on the maple seed. Well, I'd love to get my kiddies and grandbabies involved. I'm trying to figure out on my iPad. So until I do, you get a 5-star review from my family. Good night, boys. And of course, Kelly, Liz. Far as I know, they have actually, George mentioned that Kelly and Kevin have actually registered maple seed as a nonprofit entity. So they are in the midst of getting it up and running. So you should be getting some more information, maple seed information. Because who went to the boot camp? Kelly, Kevin, Rick, and did Mario go too?
I want to say Mario went, but I can't confirm that.
I know he wanted to go. I know Mario was interested. So they do have the basic number of instructors that they require. Because you have to have, in order to become an instructor or an RO, I'm trying to remember, because this is Kevin's baby. This has nothing to do with us. Kelly and Kevin were the one. Well, Kevin really liked the apple seed. But you have to have too many. You have to have your rifleman. You have to have so many shoots and to even be an orange hat, I think. And they actually all attended the instructor boot camp in Ohio, I think. So it is happening. When we get some more information, we'll put it up.
That's good. It's good to hear that it is actually still in progress. Like, it's not it didn't just die in the water, right?
No, well, I think it got put to the back burner because Kevin was doing so much with the charity suit. He didn't have time to set up anything else.
Oh, okay.
He did a lot of work, a lot. And he spent a lot of money. Hmm. So I think now that that's done and over and they've got their Sundays freed up for the CCFR stuff. I think you're probably going to see a lot more stuff happening. That's what I would suggest is maybe contact Kevin Latham or contact Kelly Lynn. Hmm. She could probably tell you more information than we could.
Yeah. I can't find anything about this express hunting license course, so maybe a Sharp 97 could send it on to us so we can pass it along to Wanda.
I'm thinking it might be something just offered by the what you call them, outfitters, because you're actually on private property.
Yeah, but you're still hunting. I'm wondering if this is more of she could go get her her H2, which allows you to hunt with anything but a gun. And I'm wondering if maybe there's something where if you have that license and you go hunting with someone with a gun license, kind of like going to the range with them, then you can use a gun.
She had her hunting license and George was with her, she could still use a gun. Like, as long as your person's within.
Is that how it works? I don't know.
Somebody else can use your gun, but they have to be under your immediate supervision.
Okay. Because I'm pretty sure she should be able to get her hunting license and actually, like, turn around and get it before we go for this hunt. I understand a gun license might take a little longer, but...
The hunting license takes quite a while. Like, the course... How long was your course when you did it?
It was a weekend.
We did the full weekend? Okay.
Yeah, it was like a 2-day... I don't know what. We'll say 8 hours. I did it with... Sarah and I did it with another couple that we're friends with, so... It went well.
But we'll have to look into this a little bit more.
Yeah, hopefully. I just want to see Wanda out there. I think it'll be a blast.
To see the look on George's face when he can't hunt with the U's gone.
Oh, I can already see the fights out in the bush. It's my turn to shoot. No, it's my turn to shoot.
What's going on with me? Because you don't have your pal.
Oh, boy.
The nice thing about the Uzcon, because it's like a semi-auto, because you don't have the lockup, so when you fart, you've got that long spring. So it's like semi-auto, because it's absorbing the recoil from the shot, but then you have to continue the cycle to finish it and then go back again. So once you get the rhythm going of that type of action, I said with my Cobra Tactical, it's the same thing. You can get on there pretty fast. It's just... When you fire it, you're actually pulling back so fast and letting it go so fast, you're actually moving the muzzle more than you would with just a straight pump. But it does soak up the recoil, so I can see why George likes it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right, so last email. Hey, guys. Having just received my first AR-15 lower in the mail today, I was thinking you should run some kind of contest or just a running tally to see how many listeners can get an AR build done before George. This is from Mark and Mark from Manitoba. I like the idea.
Why? He's evil. I like him.
Oh, I know. I think it's awesome. I think, well, for the time being, we'll start with a tally and we'll see if we can come up with maybe some sort of prize or something like that. I think if other people can start and finish a build before George can finish his, he should have to like forfeit his AR or...
We talked about how cheap George is, right?
Well, yeah.
Mind you, he does pay for all the web hostings for the show and everything else. George pays for all that, but anything else.
No, we'll look into it and we'll try and come up with something, but we'll definitely start a tally.
Yeah, so if you do any AR builds, any process, anywhere, photograph them, send them to us, give us updates, and help us bury George.
Considering Sarah's going to have her AR done before George.
Well, you know, then you look at Matthew. He actually asked the listeners to donate parts, and I think he had that thing built within 6 months.
Come on, George. You really got to pick it up.
Yeah, we're not doing promos for you. You got to buy all this stuff yourself. We're not asking for donations. You got some 223 brass. That's all you're getting.
All right, so please send any feedback, questions, or comments you may have to host@newshootercanada.ca, our Facebook page, or in the comment section on our website at newshootercanada.ca. No new iTunes or Stitchers. Facebook, we're at 1008.
Excellent. Likes.
So, yeah.
And, you know, if you got a shooting product or company that you want to promote, get in touch with us. You know, we'll run it on the air. Or if you're a listener who wants to come on the show, give us a shout and we can have you on the air too.
Yep.
Especially because we need you in a time like this when George backs out of this at the last minute. It'd be nice to say, hey, Tom, what are you doing? Come on the show tonight.
Yeah. Awesome. Anyways, closing comments.
I didn't write any.
Pardon me?
I didn't write any.
That's okay. We'll just go with the standard.
Yep.
Yep. Join and support your firearms advocacy groups, the CSSA, CCFR, CFI. I guess the NFA is out there.
What? Who?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So support them because they support us, and they're the ones out there fighting for our rights, especially with this government. We got to keep it. I'll just be happy if it stays the same for the next, we're down to 3 years now.
Oh, thank God he hasn't done anything yet. But that's why we need new groups like the CCFR that to get out there and to help fighting for our rights. Because, you know, it's great that we have the CCSA and great that we have the CF, you know, the CFI, but the more voices, the louder we're heard. So,
yep.
You know, if you got extra $20, contact the CCFR with the links on the website. Order yourself a whole, holster. Order yourself a calendar. The wife will actually like it. She may cover up September, but everything else you'll like, very tastefully done.
Yeah. Yep. And they also put out their recent video about the 1022 mag. And I think they designed it. They wanted to design it in a way that you could share it with your non-gun friend so that they could help. You could help explain the reasoning why this is a big deal.
And it is a big deal. I think, who was it asked us to share it? One of our listeners. I forgot about it. I was going to share it on the page. One of our listeners actually messaged us and asked us to put it up. So we did.
Yep. Yep. All right. Shout out. Thomas, you have any?
What's the matter, buddy?
Crickets.
No, it's the dog. You know, a shout out to all the parents that support their kids in shooting sports. You know, I know so many. When I was speaking to Jason today, apparently his parents are really, really anti shooting. He had a hard time getting into guns when he was a teenager because his parents hated it. So, you know, my shout outs to all the parents who understand hunting and the love that we have for shooting supports and for getting behind their kids and supporting them. Like people like Mary Patrick's stepdad, Scott Gardner. Look at the stuff that he does. So my shout out to all those guys and girls that take their kids out and nurture the love of the sport.
Yeah. I think that's great. We'll just end it off there.
Like silence, like just end it right here, like nothing?
No, like this is where you do your shout out. Or not your shout out, your sign off.
I'm not doing George's again.
That's fine with me. It only throws me off more when you do.
Okay, take it, kid shooting.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family. Goodbye, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Well, I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look. Like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale until I want them all. I like guns. I like guns. I like guns. I like guns.